As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, welcome into the Athletic Baseball Show. We are recording on Monday, January 17th. This is the Mailbag Edition. I'm Tim McMaster, along with Ken Rosenthal. Lots of great questions this week, focused on the lockout, also some non-lockout questions as well. Of course, the lockout rolls on. The owners did submit a core economics proposal to the players' union on Thursday. By all reports, it didn't go over particularly well with the players, so we're not necessarily any closer to spring training happening on time or the season or all of that, but at least there was a conversation. Ken, thanks for joining the show as always. And it's we haven't been together for a couple of weeks, but it's been an interesting couple of weeks.
Oh, it has, Tim. Very interesting couple of weeks. And I assume you're referring to my personal professional situation. And yeah, there have been some developments. I'm not going to say anything more about my departure from MLB Network than I said on Twitter. That's what I want to say. I'm grateful for all the time I had there, the friendships that I will continue to have, and I did my job the way I thought I should do my job, striving to always keep my journalistic integrity. So I will move on, obviously, and I still have two great jobs, but I do want to tell one funny story about the day that news broke that I was no longer going to be on the network, that they had not renewed my contract. Now, I had known for I think over 2 weeks at that point. But the news happened to break that day. And as it broke, it was about 6 o'clock at night. I was doing a podcast as the guest for none other than Brett Boone. You remember him, the former major leaguer. And Brett had asked me to be a guest. And much to my surprise, he was basically going through my whole career, asking me one question after another about that. And once that news broke, there was about a half hour left in the podcast. My phone starts blowing up. Things are going crazy. I'm not paying attention to Twitter because I'm knowing that that is going to be just crazy. So this is all going on. He could hear my phone ringing. And then with about 10 minutes left in the podcast, Brett Boone asked me, what do I like most about working for MLB Network? What's it like working there? And I said, Brett, let's pause for a second. I don't really want to talk about that. I'm leaving MLB Network. He didn't know. He's doing the podcast with me. Right. And I hadn't told anybody. So it kind of just went from there. And it was just one of those funny interludes, a crazy thing. Now, as I said, I've still got two great employers for a long time. I had three great employers. And now I am still quite proud to be at The Athletic, which was sold by our founders, Adam Hansman and Alex Mather, to the New York Times. And I know a lot of people have debated this, what's it going to mean for us, and no one really knows. We are expecting it's going to be good. But the one thing that I am really proud of, and I hope everyone at The Athletic is proud of, is that Alex and Adam started a business 6 years ago. It was nothing. No one really expected anything of it. No one knew whether it would succeed or not. When I joined, it was about, I guess, I don't know, a year into it. And to be honest, I was hoping maybe it would last a year. I really was excited by the idea, but I didn't know if this thing was going to take off. And then in 6 years, they turned something that was valued at essentially nothing, something they created, into a $550 million company. That, to me, is one of the greater achievements, at least I've been associated with in my career. Actually, perhaps the greatest. So hats off to those guys, and hats off to everyone at our place for doing what they did. And also, I should mention as well, I'm going to still be at Fox, still doing my dugout reporting, and we're going to have actually more games on the Fox Broadcast Network this year than usually in the past. We've had a lot on FS1 during the regular season. This year we're going to what they call Big Fox on a greater number of dates. So I'm really looking forward to the season, whenever that season might begin. And one final thought before we get into the questions on the lockout. I know we've all said this ad nauseum, but I'll say it again. We're not at crunch time yet. We're going to be at crunch time soon. At the point where spring training will be at risk and consequently the regular season games will be at risk. But this is all right now just a dance. And in about 2 weeks, I expect it's going to get really serious and then we'll see what happens. I'm not necessarily optimistic, but it is a little too early to panic. I know it's annoying to fans that this is even happening, but it is not a situation yet, where people should be exceedingly worried. I expect these negotiations eventually to pick up. I don't expect them necessarily to go smoothly or quickly. But again, we are still kind of in the preview stage of what is going to happen here. We haven't really gotten down to the nitty-gritty yet.
All right. I will echo what you said about the New York Times and all of that. We are very excited about that. I've been at The Athletic a lot shorter time than you, Ken, almost 3 years, though, right at the beginning of the podcasting at The Athletic. So kind of the bottom floor of that. But it's been an exciting time the whole time, and it continues to be. Let's get into the mailbag.
Hey, this is Ken. I'm not available right now. Please leave a voicemail.
If you want to get involved in the next mailbag, it'll be in a couple of weeks, 646-543-7072. That's the way to call us. Get your voicemail in. We'll get to hear your voice. We love that. Or you can also email us, tabaseballshow@gmail.com. That's tabaseballshow@gmail.com. All right, we're going to start with the email, Ken. The first one is from John. He says, I read your recent column about injured players and the limbo they're stuck in. It made me think about other groups of MLB employees, the front office folks, particularly GMs and people that are running baseball operations. These are the people whose jobs depend on building competitive teams, and the health and training of their players is crucial. This business of not being able to talk with the players on their team seems ridiculous, and as you said, not ideal. Most GMs spend time in the clubhouse these days. Many are barely a generation older than the players and have their best interests at heart, but they are reporting directly to owners. It seems like a terrible position to be in. Can you speak to how the GMs deal with the lockout?
John, this is a very good question. And clearly, while yes, the GMs have relationships with the players, they work for the owners. So they are part of management. They know that, and they do their jobs accordingly. Now, I asked an assistant GM just last night, hey, what has it been like? And the way he described it was not crazy busy, but we're not bored either. And the reason for that is that there still are things going on that the front offices can do that have nothing to do necessarily with dealing with major league players. For instance, and you've seen this, the hirings of coaching staffs. That's major and minor league. The Mets and the A's, they just completed their staffs. A number of teams were still in the process when the lockout began. And it's not just major league staffs we're talking about. It's minor league instructors, different positions that the organizations need to fill. That's ongoing. They're also plotting free agent and trade strategy. While they can't talk to each other about deals and they can't talk to agents and they can't talk to players, they can certainly take a step back from that frenzy that we had just before the lockout and kind of try to figure out their next move. Some teams as well are scouting amateurs. I'm sure some GMs are taking a look at that. They're also signing minor league free agents. You've seen those announcements in the past couple of weeks. And one thing that I guess I didn't realize that they were doing, they're having regular conference calls, a number of clubs, on COVID and how that might affect things going forward this season. So while the pace is certainly not normal, compared to the average offseason. It's not as if the front offices are quiet either.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Jeffrey Twyman is next. He says, I've not heard expansion mentioned at all during these negotiations, and that surprises me. I thought the owners would present it as an offer to players that everyone benefits from. Players get 52 Major League Baseball jobs plus additional roster players, which owners can sell. In addition, we have seen a trend of older players not getting MLB contracts and moving overseas, like Adam Jones. With more teams, there are more jobs for players like that. Owners get expansion fees, with the NHL just generating over $1 billion in Vegas and Seattle's expansions. So now the owners would be looking at splitting a bigger pot than that, which should please them. In addition, more teams making the playoffs makes it more palatable and splits the leagues evenly, so no interleague play. Thought that could be moot with rule changes anyway. I just see expansion as a win-win for both parties. It has not been mentioned from what I've seen so far. Is it a possibility? What are your thoughts on this, Ken?
Jeffrey, all good points, but one thing to remember here is that the commissioner, Rob Manfred, has consistently said over the past several years that they are not going to address expansion until the Tampa Bay and Oakland situations are resolved. Now, if you want to take a cynical view, you could say they're not going to do expansion right now in the middle of labor talks because, hey, then they'd have to account for that money and the players would say we want our share. Better they should do it after the agreement is reached and it's their money alone. There's no dispute over it. Actually, I don't think that's going on here. I think what Manfred has said is indeed the plan. They want to resolve Oakland. They want to resolve Tampa Bay. Now, Oakland will come first, whether they move to Las Vegas, get a new deal in Oakland, or maybe perhaps relocate to some other city. Their lease in Oakland expires in 2024 after that season. Tampa Bay, we know about their situation, the split city proposal in Tampa and in Montreal, two open-air ballparks that would be built. But this is not going to resolve that quickly because their lease runs through 2027. So, is it possible decisions could be made sometime in the next year with Oakland? Yes. And maybe in the next few years with Tampa Bay? Yes. And maybe even sooner in the Rays case. But it is not something baseball is prepared to deal with just yet. And the reason for that is they want to see what happens with these teams to see if they need to relocate them to some of the expansion candidate cities and then go from there. So in an ideal world for Major League Baseball, I would think Tampa gets resolved favorably, however it is resolved. Oakland gets resolved favorably, maybe even in Oakland. Then they could expand to some of these other cities, and Vegas would be one candidate. Again, not something that they are prepared to do right away, but it is something that is almost certainly going to happen in the near future. 32, as a number of teams, is really the perfect number when you're talking about expanding the playoffs and fixing the schedule and all of that.
Yeah, 32 would make a lot of people's jobs easier, I think, across Major League Baseball. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day, crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants, an upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads, an ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLBSHOW. All right, next question. All reports indicate that Major League Baseball will expand the playoffs. Ken, you've said that quite a bit. Most opponents of expanding the playoffs cite the potential for mediocre teams to water down the product. While I don't subscribe to this school of thought, particularly in a sport like baseball, I do understand the logic behind it. My question for you is, if an alternative approach to expanding the playoffs has at all been considered, specifically, instead of expanding the number of teams eligible for the playoffs, expanding the number of games in the playoffs while keeping the format and number of teams the same, for example, making the wild card round a best of three series and the division series best of seven. My biggest qualm with the postseason right now is that it ends before it begins for a lot of teams. I think most people see this in one game wild card, but I think the division series is too short as well. The White Sox, for example, were a great story last season after a long postseason drought, yet before they even play in Chicago, the series felt like it was over after two losses in Houston. Thoughts?
Interesting thoughts, for sure. And I did a little bit of math trying to figure out how many more games baseball would get under the expanded 14-team format that's been proposed, as opposed to what you're suggesting, which is essentially expanding the playoffs by increasing the number of games in the wild card and division series rounds. Basically, if you did that, and please, if my math is wrong, forgive me. If you did that with the wild card and the division series, you'd get 12 extra games maximum. With the extra wild card round, which in the expanded format would be a best of three, so that's something that would satisfy you, there would be at least 16 games added, and you get, of course, more teams involved, more revenue. That's 16 games over what we presently have, a maximum. So, obviously, there's four more games, the way I calculate it, with what they're proposing than what you're saying. But at the same time, having that greater number of teams, having the extra round, all of that, it makes for more excitement in baseball's view. It makes for a better format. Now, this is in dispute. The union is not necessarily in favor of expanded playoffs, though they have issued their own proposal for a 12-team as opposed to a 14-team format. There is concern among the players that expanding the format would make it a situation where large market teams in particular would say, we don't need to spend as much. We can get in. It's 14 teams. Almost half the teams are in. We'll make it easy. Baseball counters by saying, no, it will increase competition for some of the lower revenue teams as they try to get in. You can debate this till you're blue in the face. I think you can also structure the expanded playoffs in a way that incentivizes everyone. So, long story short, what they're considering is not what you're suggesting with just lengthening the rounds. What they want to do is increase the number of teams. And if this happens, and I do expect it to happen in some fashion in the new CBA, whether it's 12 teams or 14, it's going to happen in that way.
We just saw football also expand their playoffs this year with the seventh team getting in. That didn't go so well this weekend with those seventh seeds getting blown out. But baseball is a little different in that I think game to game is a lot more volatile as far as teams pulling upsets and that kind of thing. Wildcard teams have always had a great shot in Major League Baseball's playoffs. Next question, Keith Mendez says, has anyone heard about the status of the insurance payout to MLB teams for the 2020 season? I know MLB sued its insurance providers in late 2020 for refusing to pay claims related to lost profits and extra expenses. Is there any expected movement? Negotiations during the lockout aren't going anywhere. Getting back hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, would give the owners additional leverage against the players who lost out on 100 game checks without recourse. Thanks for all you do, Ken.
Keith, really good question, and I don't have an answer. That lawsuit that you mentioned was filed in December 2020 by the league and all 30 teams. As you mentioned, they sued their insurance providers, citing billions of dollars of losses during the 2020 short season that was played without fans because, of course, the coronavirus pandemic had hit. What they're talking about are the money lost from unsold tickets, concessions, parking, luxury suites, that kind of thing, in-park merchandise sales, corporate sponsorships, a variety of things. I imagine, because we have not heard anything, I did do a Google search, that this is still unresolved. It's been about a year, and these things generally take quite a long time to resolve. Anyone who has ever dealt with an insurance company knows that. So my guess is that baseball does not have a real firm grasp right now on where this stands. Obviously, it's a negotiation, and if it stands in a place where it's going to be advantageous to them, they might not even want it out there in a situation where they're still dealing with labor negotiations.
All right, the next question, Ken, is broad, I will say that, but it's happily about post-lockout, which is nice. This one, Brody, says, once the lockout is over, is there any sense how long it will take or where any of the big-name free agents may go, either from talks before the lockout or grumbling since it has begun? Happy New Year to everyone.
Well, first of all, once the lockout ends, there is going to be a frenzy that might even top the frenzy we saw in the week before the lockout. And the reason for that is what I'm expecting is maybe a two-week period where the free agents get done, the trades are all made for the most part, and we just see a flurry, an incredible flurry of transactions. And keep in mind, arbitration also has to take place, but I imagine that's going to extend into the season. As uncomfortable as that might be for, say, a pitcher arguing his case in May and then having to pitch that night, those are the kinds of things that could ensue. It's happened that way before. But free agents, trades, there's going to be a brief window, and it's going to be insane. Now, as for who might be active, this is something we haven't talked about in a while because, of course, we haven't had the reason to talk about it. But when this sucker ended, or when the lockout hit, there were a number of teams still kind of in a mode where we expected them to spend. And I'm going to mention three and a fourth that kind of fits this description as well. The Dodgers. Remember, they didn't sign Corey Seager back. They didn't sign Max Scherzer back. That's a lot of money that they will not be spending. They could be getting money back on Trevor Bauer if he is suspended into the 2020 season. So they are a team that could be active. We've heard them linked to Freddie Freeman. I've reported that. Who knows? They could even get involved in Correa. They'll have money to burn. Seattle is another team that agents expect is going to be quite active. Could be Trevor Story, could be Chris Bryant as their big piece, and they could do some other things as well. Toronto, yet another team that is expected to be still quite active and quite busy. It's a team that's been linked to Freddie Freeman, who, remember, played for Canada in the 2017 WBC, I believe. I can't remember the year, but he did play for Canada. His parents are both from Canada. Who knows? Maybe that could work out. And then one other team to watch, a team that's been somewhat active already, Detroit. They have to still fortify their pitching staff, could get a starter, could get a reliever. And remember as well, from a trade perspective, Oakland's pitchers are still out there, as well as Matt Olson and Matt Chapman, and Cincinnati's pitchers still could be moved. I don't know if it's going to be Luis Castillo, but certainly Sonny Gray is a possibility. So those are just some of the things that are going to happen. There is going to be a ton that happens once this thing ends. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll see exactly when that takes place.
Yeah, and hopefully all this, you know, bad vibes from the lockout just vanishes because it's going to be so exciting. That's what I'm hoping for, at least, is that we just have this sprint.
Yeah, that could happen, Tim. And keep in mind, too, I should mention this as well, that historically, when a new CBA is reached, the money gets spent like crazy. Now, this is going to be a little bit of a different situation because it's going to happen so fast, but owners generally feel confident that labor peace is assured for a set number of years, and they are more willing to spend in that situation. I don't know if it'll influence this particular group. It should, but certainly in the years ahead, I would expect that it would help things along for the players.
Good news for the players for sure. All right, next question is from Brian. He says, hey, Tim and Ken, I'm a huge Reds fan that lives just outside of Cincinnati. I was born and raised in Dayton, Ohio, and the history of the Reds was drilled into my soul by my family when I was a kid. The Big Red Machine and the Wire-to-Wire 1990 Club stand out the most. My question today is in regards to viewer ratings for MLB. I often see random social media posts or news articles written about how the viewership of baseball is doing compared to other major leagues. The news I read is often flipped with each article I see. Oftentimes I read viewership was up, but then 2 days later it tends to be down. Rather it be the World Series, the ALCS, the NLCS. Ken, can you shed some light on how the actual viewership numbers do look? I often wonder what's actually true or not, and I always hope that viewing is up for the sport.
Brian, I will do my best, and this is a complicated question, and I can understand your confusion because in certain respects, the way to look at ratings is almost an apples and oranges comparison at times. Let's start with World Series ratings. Now, you will frequently read, oh, they're down. They're the lowest since this, at the other thing. They're not what they used to be. No, they're not what they used to be. In 1975, the Reds and Red Sox played a classic World Series, right? 36 million people on average watch that World Series. 51 million watch Game 7. These are crazy numbers. This past year, 11 million was the average for the World Series viewership. And you might say, wow, that must mean the sport is dying. It doesn't mean that at all, because you have to look at this in context. In the mid-70s and I guess into the early 80s, I don't know when the shift exactly occurred, but there were three over-the-air national stations. That was it in 1975. It was NBC, CBS, ABC. Now, you might notice there are a few more. There's streaming. There is all kinds of other fragmentation in the media industry. There are video games. There are subscription services for movies you can watch at home. There's all kinds of things going on. So the competition is much more intense. So what the networks look at least from what I understand, is how the World Series, and we're just using that as one example for now, compares to primetime programming, primetime entertainment programming that occurs in the normal entertainment season, a normal television season. And the amount of time or hours that a World Series takes up is about the amount of time that you'll see in a season of a comedy or a drama. And what happens over the last 6 years, what has happened, is that the World Series is rated number one when compared to any other primetime show. That's the apples-to-apples comparison as opposed to the apples-to-oranges. Now, local television ratings, that's a little bit more complicated. And in general, they've been strong, stronger than the national ratings, because fans are attracted to their own teams much more so than other teams that might be playing in a national situation. But while they do better than the national networks during the regular season, there are a number of factors that might affect it. Streaming being one, Bally taking over for Fox, some of those local networks as well. That's another issue because Bally's had a difficult time with distribution to some of the cable carriers. So it's a little bit complicated, but generally speaking, teams that do well do quite well with their local television ratings. And even a team like Tampa Bay that doesn't draw into its stadium, Tropicana Field, all that well, has a fairly good television audience from what I understand. Last year, the Red Sox were way up, I believe, locally, because they had a great entertaining year, the White Sox as well. So it sort of depends and hinges on performance. But generally speaking, the local television networks, when the team is compelling, do pretty well.
It's built so differently than the NFL when people think of those ratings. You see so many of those ratings with the NFL because all the games are national, basically. It's just what region you're in, who gets picked up. But baseball's so different with the local. And the interest is different, I think, because of that, too. I think that people that are NFL fans are more likely to watch a national NFL game that their team's not playing in, whereas baseball, people are just, they love their teams, and they stick to that.
There's no question about that, Tim. And from another perspective, I hear this from people all the time. I'm not watching your game on Fox. I want to hear my announcers. And I get it. People form relationships with their own broadcasters. They get used to them. They're kind of the sounds of summer. And it's just a different vibe than, yes, what the NFL is, which is a national game at all times. So, sure, there are structural differences between the two, but again, with the World Series ratings in particular, you have to put it in the context of the era that we're in.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, the next question comes from voicemail.
Ken, this is Reggie from Austin, Texas. It seems to me, and when Manfred came in, I was hopeful he might do some things better than what his predecessor had done. There were certainly things Selig did that I had no problem with as a fan. There were other things, obviously, that I was troubled by. But it seems, just from my personal viewpoint, that Manfred now has a significant trust deficit. But there have been quite a few instances where I feel like Manfred talks out of both sides of his mouth. There's been lots of comments about how they want the fans to come back to the ballpark and they want it to be a safe environment. I frankly don't feel like it's safe enough. I didn't go to a game in 21. I will not go to a game in 22. Given the league's recent actions that feel very Trumpy or Nixonian, use your favorite dystopian reference, I'm convinced that the trust deficit that the league has with all of its constituent stakeholders will not be resolved until he is replaced, and preferably by an outsider from another sport. Baseball needs an Adam Silver, and I don't think baseball has the bandwidth to realize how urgent that need is, and I would like your thoughts.
Reggie, Rob Manfred's future in baseball hinges largely on the outcome of these labor negotiations. If for some reason they don't end well for the owners, if for some reason they have reason to be upset, whether it's the deal is too player-friendly or it doesn't get settled until after games are lost, it would have to be a situation like that for the owners to even think about a new commissioner. And remember, Rob Manfred is under contract through 2024. Salaries in the $11 million range that increase each season. So it's not a situation where his deal is up or they're looking to get rid of him. He is generally enjoyed, from what I could tell, and it's difficult to read the owners sometimes, pretty widespread support. And the reason for that is he's made the owners a lot of money. And they survived the pandemic and did okay with that, it seems. So, to me, a lot hinges on what happens here in the next few weeks. And what is the likely outcome in the next few weeks? That they get a deal. Maybe not in the next few weeks. Maybe it takes a month or two. I don't know. They get a deal. They move forward. And things are pretty good. I just can't see it any other way. Now, the doomsday scenario, they lose a month of the season. People are just incredibly upset with Manfred, fans, and the owners at that point maybe have no choice but at least to consider alternative possibilities. I don't know that that will happen. I don't know that it won't happen. Obviously, to many fans, Manfred is not a good commissioner. He is widely unpopular. I think that is fair to say, but it's the owners whose vote counts here. And those are the ones, the guys or the women, who will make this decision. And right now, I don't see any way he will not be commissioner through the rest of his contract unless something with the labor disrupts things.
Yep. Viewpoint of owners on a commissioner is always very different than the viewpoint of the fan base. We have one more question, Ken. It comes from Daniel Zerby, a regular. He says, "Hey, Ken, the recent hours of my work week that were not filled with the mailbag," thanks, Dan, we appreciate that, "were filled with Moneyball, the audiobook. I enjoyed it immensely, but was also simultaneously struck by the lack of baseball literature that I have consumed. I was wondering if there are any baseball books you would consider to be a must for an avid fan."
I'll give you a couple, and one that most fans probably haven't read but should read, in my opinion, is Lords of the Realm by John Hellyer. this is a history of baseball's labor negotiations and relations up to, I don't know, maybe 2006 or so. I don't recall when it was through. But while you might think the subject matter is boring, you don't want to read another word about labor, I understand. That book is highly entertaining, and it really brings to life what happened. So I would highly recommend that book. It's just a fascinating read, and I often go back to it during times like these to refer and remember just kind of how we got here. And that will help maybe understand the relationship between these parties. I can go on and on. A lot of my friends have written some fantastic books, Jason Stark among them, and there are a number of really great reads out there for fans. I would say that the amount of baseball literature is actually quite good. But here are two books that I will recommend that I just found really entertaining and interesting. One is by John Feinstein, who is, yes, a friend. This is a book called Where Nobody Knows Your Name, and it's John doing what John does, going into the minor leagues in this case and talking to a lot of different people, bringing their characters to life and kind of painting a portrait of what minor league baseball is like. The other one, and it's a similar kind of book in one respect in that it deals with the minor leagues, in fact, an independent league, is a book called The Only Rule Is It Has to Work. And it's by two journalists that I really respect, Ben Lindbergh and Sam Miller. And what those two guys did was take their sabermetric principles, both are sabermetrically inclined writers, and apply them or attempt to apply them to an independent league team in California that they ran for one summer. And this book, too, is highly entertaining because it shows that sometimes implementing things that might seem like great ideas, not so easy. And Ben and Sam really paint a terrific account or give a terrific account of what that was like for them. And I highly recommend that one as well. But look around. There are plenty of great baseball books out there. And maybe one of these days I'll even write one if I ever get the time.
There's more baseball books than in any other sport. I think it's safe to say that, right? That baseball, just because of the history and everything, there's just so many books out there. All right, that's going to do it. That's the last question for this week. Great questions, both the ones about the lockout and the non-lockout questions. If you want to get your question in for the next show, that'll be in a couple of weeks, 646-543-7072, or email us tabaseballshow@gmail.com. And the next episode with you, Ken, on the mailbag is going to be right at the beginning of February, which is right around when this all began. You thought that we'd be getting somewhere. So it'll be a definite cool time to check in again on this. see how you did.
We shall see, Tim.
Keep coming back all week long. Later this week, DVR and Keith Law will weigh in with their episode again. You can save 33% off a subscription to The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/baseballshow. Have a great weekend.